Yeah. You know what?
I like the way you work it.
No dig.
I like the way you work it.
No dig.
I like the way you work it.
No digging.
I like the way you work it.
No dig.
My name is Caleb. I'm a senior camera operator at BBC Wales. I've been involved with a lot of different things with work, so anything from Wimbledon through to big rugby matches, through to this week where I was in Brussels covering the whole Brexit debate. My work kind of varies quite a bit. So with the job, quite often I'm working with quite high-profile people. So probably like in the last 6 months, we've done a few bits where I've been filming with the Queen and Prince Charles. So kind of a lot of what we do is quite high-pressure stuff. There's usually only a short window of filming, so it's very much a case of kind of getting it right on the day, and time is money, so that equates to filming time. They want to keep it as short as possible. So there's a lot of pressure with the job, but it's something you get used to very quickly. I'm looking to just do my best to continue to improve, and not just working for my boss and serving and my fellow colleagues. It's actually also the fact that I'm accountable to God in what I do. And I'm also looking to serve him with my whole heart as if he was my boss. And it's that kind of mindset when I go into work, and particularly when I'm working in creative industry, I look at creation around me and I've got an incredible creative God. So for me in the morning, it's that sense of asking sometimes just the simple thing of kind of, I want to be able to show this incredible creation in a slightly unique and creative way. And just asking God for just creative insights and stuff like that is a really incredible thing when it comes to my day at work. When I took the job that I'm in now, I was offered one elsewhere, and I said no to that purely because I wanted to be planted in my church in Bristol, and to keep that as a solid, continuous thing. And that also means kind of when it comes to a Sunday to serving, quite often where possible I try and fit work around church rather than church around work. What I enjoy most about my work, I love the fact that every day is different, no 2 days are the same, and I also love the fact that I get to just showcase people's stories, whether that be the story of their life or maybe something they've done, an act of service, that I get to showcase that and show that to a lot of people. We need Christians in the workplace, but particularly my industry, because we're quite clearly told just to be salt and light in our world, and whatever that world may be for you. But for me, in my industry, it's just that case of just living and walking with God, and that being just shining my light in doing that, and showing people this is how we live, this is how we want to serve each other, how we want to love each other, and just shining our light and just pointing people towards God. I wouldn't say it's always easy to share my faith in work, but what I have noticed that just being someone that's integrous, trying to be cleaner than clean, trying to be honest, means that people ask questions, they see that something's different, and they want to find out more about that, and that's just a great in into just sharing my faith in work.
Often when someone gets up here and they start doing the talk, confession, I sometimes go into a little bit of my own zone, and the Monday blues hit, and I start to go, oh no, I've got to go to work tomorrow, and these are all the things that I've got to get done. So we thought, rather than you lot just thinking about work, we'd actually start talking about it. So we are in week 2 of our series on work, and actually 50% of our waking hours as humans are spent working. Now, some of you are going, you know what, Chloe, it feels like way more than half my day that I spend working. But over the course of your lifetime, that is 25% of your lifetime is spent working. 25% of your waking hours as a human is spent working. I can see Ben with his fingers to his head right now. Yeah. And most of us here will probably spend around 50 years of our life working. So seeing as we spend so much time doing it, we thought, okay, let's see what the Bible has to say about it. Now, last week, Philip opened up our series, and he did some amazing background into what God says about work. And we were talking about what paradise looks like for us and all the things that we'd include in it. But one of the things we didn't say we'd include was working. But yet God did, right at the very beginning, right when he made things how they should be. He was so intentional about creating a perfect world, and that included work for humans. And it was for not only the world, but the people doing it to find purpose and pleasure. But we also looked at the narrative of Adam and Eve and how actually through their disobedience, creation became broken. How God's perfect ideal of what work should look like didn't look like that anymore. Work became hard. Work became toil. And then we fast-forwarded a whole load and we looked at Jesus and how he came to renew all things. And that how we now are to be agents of God's renewal, even in our workplace. Now, it's me this week, and Philip was quite keen for me to do this talk. I'm sure he'll tell you that, because he claims that he doesn't have a real job. Now, anyone who knows Philip will actually know that he has several very real jobs that he works incredibly hard at. So maybe you go all affirm him afterwards that he does have a real job. However, Philip claims that I do have a real job. As whilst I kind of run around and do bits on stage for Metro, 5 days a week, I'm a speech and language therapist for kids. So I thought, you know what, great opportunity to show you my work selfie. So here it is. There we go. Now, as you can see, I am paid to play. Someone's got to do it, and I'm glad it's me. And what happens is if you work with kids, or even if you know kids, you know that unless what you're doing is very, very fun, there's no chance of keeping them motivated. Like, seriously, they're not going to do it. So with me and my therapy, often we've got to get some visuals out. And I get them to choose, okay, what are you working for today? When you've done my task, you can do your thing. Now, for a lot of them, it's bubbles or hungry, hungry hippos or something like that. And they love it and it keeps them going. And it got me thinking, okay, as adults, as grown-ups, what would we fill that blank in with? What would we say I am working for? What would it be? I mean, if your answer is bubbles or hungry, hungry hippos, I'm going to suggest that a career in speech therapy is probably for you. I spend most of my time doing those two things. But really, turn to your neighbour and tell them instantly, how would you fill in that blank? How would you fill in, I am working for... The weird thing is, in this room, I can hear you. Have a chat with your neighbours. What are you working for? Okay, I'm hearing various rumblings of things I thought you might say. So some of you probably have said, instant reaction, I am working for money. That is the big thing for me. Money, well, that means I can buy stuff that I want. I am working for holidays, another thing. I am working for weekends. Maybe you're going a bit long game here, you know, like, I'm working really hard now for my early retirement. Maybe some of you went a bit more philosophical. You said, I am working for... purpose, identity, is what keeps me going and gets me up in the morning. Maybe some of you said, you know what, right now it's a specific, I am working for promotion. But regardless what you said, what you filled that blank in with, one thing is certain. What we're working for changes our approach to work, okay? So if you said, I am working for money, literally I'm just working for money, Chloe, you might kind of clock in and out of work, do the bare minimum. Provided you don't get fired, you get the money, right? That's all it's about. But if, on the other hand, you say, actually, Chloe, I want that promotion, your approach is going to look so different because you're working for something completely different. You might do extra hours. You might try and work really hard in front of your boss. You might go the extra mile to let them see who you are. So what we can say is that what we're working for massively changes our approach. So if that's the case, Have you ever thought about what the Bible says about that blank? What the Bible says that we're working for? Because as we looked at last week, well, the Bible talks about work right from the beginning to the end. And it doesn't talk about the big picture stuff just the big picture stuff, but it talks about all the practical stuff too, the 9-to-5 stuff. And the Bible addresses headlong what that blank should be. In fact, the answer that the Bible gives is, I am working for God. Now, some of you are going, oh, rubbish. That is the answer I should have given her. We're at a churchy thing. That is the churchy answer. Well, great. Others of you are feeling a bit smug right now because that is the answer that you gave. Also great. But for a lot of us here, right, our first reaction to that is no, just no. Seriously, Chloe, that has got nothing to do with it. Nothing at all. Because God, you just don't know what I do. You have no idea what my job is. So how could I be working for God? Well, let's take a look at the passage today. So we are going to be looking at a bit in the New Testament. It's from a book called Colossians. Colossians was a letter written from a guy called Paul. Now, Paul wrote a lot of the New Testament, and here he's writing to some Greeks and some Hebrews who are city workers. And he says to them about work, he says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as if working for the Lord, not for human masters. So here the Bible spells out really clearly that for those who follow Jesus, that blank is God, okay? You are working for God. Now you might instantly go, you know what, Chloe, that's still not true. Because, okay, it might say that, but like, God is not interested in what I do. God is not interested in my 9-to-5. God is not interested in Excel, right? No one can be interested in that. God is not interested in me making soy milk, half-frat, cappuccino frattes, whatever they're called. Like, God is just not interested in that. Because God likes churchy, holy jobs. God likes, you know, church leaders. God likes missionaries, people who might go and help people in Africa. God likes whatever Philip does around here. Sorry, Philip, you do have a real job. Genuinely, he has a real job, okay? But maybe at a push, God likes charity workers, people who maybe go and dig wells or something like that. But you're sat here today and you are a builder. You are a dancer. You are a writer. You're a delivery man. And you just go, God is not interested in what I do. And we get into that kind of thinking because actually we categorize stuff up in our lives between things we think God is interested in, the holy bit, the sacred bit, and things we think he isn't interested in, everything else, the secular bit. So we've got the sacred and the secular, things God is interested in, things God isn't interested in. So we've got, you know, spreadsheets, God is not interested. We've got church services, God is interested. We've got email sending, God not interested. We've got prayer meetings, God is interested. And we split things up like that, that sacred, secular divide. But the thing is, that kind of splitting things up into boxes isn't new thinking. In fact, it's not a new phenomenon at all. The people that Paul is writing to got into that way of thinking. They become Christians and it was great and the good news of Jesus was amazing. But it was just a Sunday thing. And then everything else was outside of that. Everything else was not godly at all. And here Paul is encouraging them that actually that great divide, secular, sacred, isn't so much of a divide at all. In fact, he's saying to them that, you know what, guys, the great news of Jesus, it reframes everything. And he's just talked to them about how the great news of Jesus reframes their character, reframes the way they do their relationships and their management. And now he's talking about work. And he's saying, you know what, God, he's not just a Sunday thing. He's saying, look, that sacred secular divide doesn't exist, not at all. And he's saying to them, hey, look, your faith is meant to be in every area of your life, invade every area of your life, work included. But when we hear, you know what, faith at work, and we hear Metro are doing a series on work, we sort of expect that we're going to talk about how to tell your colleagues about Jesus. And that's something that we're really excited by and something that we'd really like to do. And we, as Christians, we want to make the most of every opportunity to talk to people about Jesus. And in a couple of weeks, Philip is going to come and he's going to do just that with us, and it's going to be amazing. But if your job is anything like mine, I feel like 90% of my week is actually spent not talking to my co-workers, not even about Jesus. It's just spent doing the day in, day out, same paperwork, same children, and there's nothing there. It's just very ordinary. And there's no overt reference to my faith. There's not even like a God bless on my emails. There's nothing there. So maybe if I'm working for God, as that Bible passage says, I need a different job. I need one of those holy sounding jobs. Maybe the people that Paul is writing to had like very Bible jobs, very holy jobs. So that's why he was saying, yeah, you're working for God. So let's go back to our passage and let's look actually who Paul was addressing this to. He was addressing this to slaves. And you're going, yeah, Paul really understands how I feel about my workplace. He says, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything and do it not only when the eye is on you and to curry their favour, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Okay, so just a quick aside here, slavery, right? The Bible mentioning it doesn't mean it's condoning it. Paul is very much writing into a cultural context here. This slavery wasn't sort of a racial-based slavery. It was more of a servitude. People who had rights and freedoms and an end date to their servitude. And often they were working off a debt or something. But what we do know about the people Paul was writing to was a large proportion of the city were slaves. So Paul is writing to a pretty massive group here. And they were slaves, right? So this isn't like a Bible holy sounding job. But yet Paul says you were working for God. And what's interesting about that is, well, slaves would have had some of the most menial jobs. They would have known what it was to do things in the unseen places. But yet Paul is going, you with the less than dream job, you who know what it is to not be doing what you want to do right now. You who, you know, what you do is so menial and no one sees you. You who's doing the ordinary. Yes, you are working for God. And in this passage, oh, I'm getting ahead of myself now. I'm that excited about it. and so Paul calls him out for name, by name, but like, even for us, right, when we have chosen what we want to do as our career, when maybe we've had a bit of a luxury of choice in that decision, it still feels a bit, you know, difficult because what we do is pretty ordinary. Now, again, probably like a lot of you, I have had the luxury of choosing the jobs that I do. In fact, I've had the luxury of choosing the career that I do and the training that I do. But there were a few difficult bits along the way. Like, I love God and I want to serve him, and I knew that I was meant to be working for God. And in my head, that was like one of those holy jobs. That was like, okay, Chloe, that means you've got options between church worker or missionary. That is like the two things you've got to do. You've either got to stay here and work for a church, or you've got to go and look after people elsewhere and tell them about Jesus. But all of my gifts and skills, all the things that I was good at and interested in, well, they pointed to being a speech therapist. And I didn't feel like I'd had the call from God to say, Chloe, thou shalt be a speech therapist. It just felt so ordinary. I just didn't really know how I could tie up my faith with my work. So perhaps I should leave it out entirely. And maybe that's what you are here today and you feel like that too. That you're actually really gifted at dancing or singing or construction work, or you're an amazing writer. But you feel like that's so ordinary. How can you be working for God? But regardless of where you're at with your job, how you feel about it, what's so encouraging is that the Bible says, whatever you do, you're working for God. No job here is spiritually inferior or spiritually superior. You work for the church? Great. You're a waitress? Great. You're a full-time mum? Great. You work in Africa digging wells? Great. No job here is spiritually inferior. And in this passage, Paul is encouraging these city workers, guys who know what it is to do menial stuff, you are still working for God. Your faith and your work can go together. And in fact, that doesn't necessarily mean you change the job you do. In fact, it doesn't mean you change the job you do at all. But what it does change is your approach. He says, here's how. He says, okay, guys, work hard when your boss is with you, but work hard when they're not too. Put your all into this job and know that you are seen and loved by God through what you do. And for us too, right, we're not slaves in this culture, but Paul's words are equally as true for us. We are working for God. And as we said, what we're working for changes our approach. So how? How on earth does working for God change what we do? How does it make a difference to our 9 to 5? Technical. There we go. How does it make a difference? So we're going to pick it apart a bit. If we're working for God, right? If we're working for God, we want to work with his company values, yeah? So how do we know what his company values are? Well, Jesus, when he was on earth, said, hey, I'm here to do my father's work. I'm all about my father's business. And when he was asked, okay, what are God's company values? He summed them up like this. He said, Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. So, all right, let's break that up a little bit, okay? So let's do heart and soul to begin with. So loving the Lord your God with all your heart and soul, working with heart and soul as a company value. What does that mean? Well, Paul talks about that in his letter too. He says, work with all your heart. It's like your motivation, your attitude, your passion. Where is that coming from? I think when we work with our heart and soul, it means that we work hard. This isn't just work for show obedience, face value when the boss is looking. It would be, a real shame if we were working for God, but we're known to be a slacker. It's not just about, just looking good on the surface. It also means work with everything you've got, right? If you're in heart and soul, you're fully in it. And that includes the things that right now you think, oh, that job is so dull. I could do that job with my eyes shut. I've done that procedure time after time. Working with all our heart, working hard, means that we do that job with the same care and attention that we did in the first place. It would be so amazing as well if we were known to be quality workers, that when you've got your boss sat next to you, you work just as well as when they're not there. Or on that Friday afternoon in the office, when everyone else has gone off and they've gone on holiday and you're there, you still do a great job. I'd love for it for employers to go, hey, I'd love to employ a Christian. They're just such great workers. I think as well, if we're working with heart and soul, we add value. Adding value to the place we work in. Like, often we see so many problems right at work. Let's be people who actually seek solutions to them as well. Who go, all right, how can I bring innovation here? How can I look at what we're doing and bring some great ideas to make this more effective, to make it more efficient? Also, ask the question, what's good about the organisation I work with? What's great about their vision? And how can I advance the vision that they have got? How can I catch hold of what's great? How can I be an advocate of that and really encourage the people around us to do that too? I think it would be great as well to add value just to the atmosphere. To be someone that when you're not there, your colleagues are like, oh, I wish Tom was in this meeting. He's so good in meetings. He's just so positive and knows what to say. Let's be people to add value to our surroundings. Also, I was thinking, when someone says heart and soul, it's often someone who brings life. And a lot of stuff that happens to us at work, right, we can't control. Deadlines, probably can't control. Other people, can't control. Those emails that come in, can't control. Those complaints that come in, we can't control them often either. But what we can control is our reaction, our response. What we can control is our attitude. I think working with heart and soul means that we come at our job with cheerfulness and joy. Not begrudgingly going, oh, do I have to do that? That's not my job. Let's come at it and just do a really good job. Let's be eager to do it as well. Let's be selfless in how we work. And if you're thinking, actually, you know what, all of that heart and soul stuff, Chloe, that sounds like a recipe for burnout. Well, we really don't want that. God really doesn't want that. And in a few weeks' time, Philip's going to be coming and chatting about balance in our work life with us. And it's going to be amazing. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'd be great to show us that God really values that rest time too. So we've said that working with heart and soul means that we work hard, we add value, and we bring life. So that's heart and soul. And the next bit that Jesus talked about was loving God with all your mind. So whether you think it or not, you have a great mind. You have great brains. And all the gifts and skills and intellect that you have got, God has given you. And he wants you to use it for his good, for his glory. And so what does it look like to use our mind at work? Well, it means that we develop. So I think Caleb was really amazing in his little story at talking to us about developing. He's someone who, as a creative, probably gets some really exciting jobs, but also probably gets some really dull jobs. In fact, I know he gets some really dull jobs. But yet, for him, it's coming to the job regardless of what it is and going, you know what, how can I be better at what I do? How can I retell this person's story? How can I make the best shots? How can I keep on harnessing my skills? Maybe it's for you, it's competencies that you need in the workplace. How can you get better at what you do to honour God? How can you take responsibility for your learning? If there's something that you see around you that you're not so good at and someone else is, go and ask them how they do it. Go and say, hey, can I shadow you? When we are using our mind, we also excel. It's come up already, nice. When we work, we want to work with real excellence for God. We want to put our all in. We want to give real good quality work. And we also want to exceed expectations in what we do. I get a bit grumpy about this sometimes because I feel like the job that I do, I work really hard and actually I'm quite a junior member of staff. And sometimes I feel what I do is above and beyond what should be expected of a junior member of staff. But you know what? If I'm working for God, then yeah, if I've got something in me to give, I shouldn't really be holding back going, oh, I don't get paid to do that. But I should give it. I should go all for it. So if we're using our mind at our work, we also want to focus. Now, this is another really challenging one, right? I've just had a really crazy few weeks at work. And often when I come to my admin, I just want to sit down for a bit and not really think. But yeah, if I'm loving God with my mind, then I shouldn't come tired. I shouldn't be thinking about dinner. I shouldn't be on Facebook all the time. Actually, God's given me this mind and I should put my whole mind to what I'm doing. So loving God with our mind looks like excelling, looks like developing, and looks like focusing. So that's loving God with our heart and soul, loving God with our mind. And the next thing that Jesus talked about was love your neighbour as yourself. And very simply, that is love the people around you. And I don't know whether for you that's co-workers or whether that's the client group you work with. But something that's great about working for God is that it's not about us anymore. The work world stops revolving around us. And our whole identity and purpose is no longer driven by work. So we're released to love other people around us. And what does loving other people around us look like in the work? Well, I think it looks like being someone who helps others. We're free to share ideas and knowledge with them. Again, this has been a massive challenge for me. I feel like maybe a lot of you guys will feel like this too, but I feel like there's a lot of things in my job that I've had to work really, really hard to get, like really hard. I've had to teach myself so much stuff, so much procedural stuff. I've had to make work, organisational chaos I've had to sort. And then this new person saunters in. And because I suffered, they should suffer. It's just not fair. But actually, if it's not about me, if I'm working for God, then I can share my ideas. I can share the things that help me. I can share my knowledge. Because I want to see them do well. I want to say, actually, how can I use my platform where I am right now to bring other people up? Because it points to our next little thing, which says, champion others. When we're loving other people, we champion other people. If we're working for God, we're no longer in competition with the people around us, right? So we can support them. We can be people who want to see them flourish and thrive in that workplace. We can rejoice in the things that they rejoice in. And we can celebrate if they get promoted. Yay, go you. Even though it's not me, go you. We can be genuine about it too. Something that I've really noticed about me is when I get together with other speech therapists, often you get asked, oh, who have you been working with? Who's seen that child before? And I've tried to do this thing where I say one great thing about that therapist, that if someone mentions the therapist, I go, oh, you know what? I love how they do speech sound therapy, or their reports are incredible. It's been a real passion and a mission of mine to try and talk up my colleagues to go, you know what, they're brilliant in what they do, even behind their back, to really talk them up to other people. And even our boss, right? Even though we might not like that, but how can we release our boss into their best? Wouldn't it be great if we could be workers who lift up our boss so much that they can do the job they're meant to be doing, that they can do it well, that they are released to manage us and have vision for the company well? Loving others also means that we keep others in mind. That means that quite simply we work with the highest standard of ethics and integrity. And that when we make a decision, we think about, actually, how is this impacting the people around me? Not just sort of my wider workforce, but maybe the client group that I work with. And again, for me, I can be writing a lot of reports. I get a bit bored of them. I want to just copy and paste. But then I go, you know what? What would really help this family? What do I really need to be clear about here? What's going to be supportive for them? And just take that extra little bit of time to make sure that I'm helping those around me. So there we go. That is heart and soul, mind, and loving others. And that might feel like I've literally just chucked a whole load of theory at you, a whole load of listy stuff. And sometimes it can be helpful to have a bit of a story to think about this. And I was talking with my brother the other day, and he gave me a great one, and he said I could use it. So here we go. My brother has been working for a church in Northern Ireland for a couple of years. This January, he actually moved from working for that church to England. And he moved to take up a graduate position as an engineer. Now, this for him was a huge move, not just geographically, not just his friends, not just his community, but the kind of work he was doing as well. He went from doing this job with a church where he was seeing people come to know Jesus all the time, he was seeing healing, a job where he was heading up some amazing community initiatives, something, a job that all of us would say, yeah, that's a really godly job, that's a sacred kind of job, that one. And then he moved to a world of office, meetings, bad air conditioning, ties, engine parts. He was the lowest of the low. He's the lowest in the food chain in that company as a graduate. He really is. And that is, we don't think like a godly job, right? That's the job we think, oh, that's quite secular, isn't it? And for my brother, it would have been so easy for him to go, okay, God, what am I doing here? Well, I've left the godly job. I cannot be furthering the kingdom in this job right now as an engineer, surely not. But he didn't. Day in, day out, he worked really hard, putting his all in. And he said that he wasn't doing anything big or radical, but he knew who he was working for. He knew what his blank was. He knew that he was working for God. And that changed his approach. He knew that working with God's company values looked like working with his heart and soul, working with his mind and loving those around him. And he just kept going with that. And a couple of months in, he had an appraisal with his manager. And remarkably, his manager sat him down and started admitting that when my brother had started in January, his manager was on the verge of quitting his job. Things had gone so badly the year before, and they'd had this project, and it just wasn't working. And his manager was so low. But again, he went on to say that months in, Dan being there, things had really turned around. This project was now working. And he said to Dan, look, you have really worked with your mind. You have really worked with your excellence and your quality, the way you've come to work with that. But he also said, hey, you've really worked with your heart and soul here. You've got some amazing character and attitude that you're bringing to work. And his manager said, look, work for me now is a much happier place. The team around us, they're all a lot more positive. Things are working. We're gelling as a team. This is great. And that wasn't through anything big or radical, but that was just putting that blank as God and doing things God's way with God's company values in his work. There was no overt reference to his faith. His manager didn't then and there become a Christian. But it's just an incredible kingdom-bringing step that my brother in that place was able to say, hey, look, this is a bit of what work is meant to look like, that Jesus brought in this renewal of all things, work included. But what about us, right, when we don't get the cool stories, when our manager doesn't notice, when things are just really dull and no one's come to know Jesus and we just feel like we're plodding on with our daily job? What if we don't ever get the cool stories? Well, the reason I'm telling my brother's story is because right now, in all honesty, I don't have one of my own work stories. I'm sure I'll get one at some point, but not right now. And it can be quite disheartening. And I can imagine for the slaves that Paul was writing to as well, they probably weren't seen by their boss for doing things God's way. They probably didn't get a round of applause at the end of each working day. But Paul really encourages them in this letter. He goes on to say, whatever you do, work at it with all of your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. So our reward, our recognition for the work in the unseen places, wow, it's a heavenly inheritance. And We don't know what that reward is. Paul doesn't tell us, and there's a real mystery about it. But what we do know is that when we finish up on earth, our good, loving God goes, "Hey, I saw what you did there. I saw that was great. I saw that you did things my way, and I loved it. Here's the reward." And hear me out here, that God's favour for us is absolutely a gift. It's not at all earned. But there is a reward there for us. And that's not just in the future, here and now too. Working for God, working with our blank being God, working with his values, his company values, his way of doing things, that is the best, most joy-filled, most meaningful, most purposeful way that we could work. We're part of something bigger. We all want to be part of something bigger. So no matter what we're doing, we are agents of God's renewal of the workplace. We can have a profound impact on the atmosphere, the project, the people, everything about the place that we work. So my challenge for you is, as we're coming towards summer, I think a lot of people's workplaces sort of die down a bit. We go, "Oh, it's summer. Yay, I can hopefully work a little bit less and just slack off a little bit, go on holiday a lot." And my challenge for all of us is actually this summer, let's put our blank as God. Let's say, "I am working for God." Let's work with his company values. Let's work with our heart and soul. Let's work with our minds. Let's work loving the people around us. And I think as we do that, we're going to see some great stories. And I would love for us to come back in the autumn and start telling some great workplace stories about what has happened to us. And I think as Caleb's story and as my brother's story has really kind of shown, we can be really powerful as people of faith in our workplace. We can really change the atmosphere. And it'd be great for us as Metro people to be doing that. So in a sec, I'm going to pray and the band are going to come up and we're going to worship some more. But today's big idea is we are working for God. This changes our approach. So we work with his company values, working with our heart, soul and mind and loving others. So let's pray. Father God, I thank you so much that you care really deeply about our work, that you have originally intended work to be purposeful and to bring us pleasure. I thank you that you love all our places of work. You love what we're doing. You've given us our gifts and skills. I thank you that you don't want us to change job, that you have uniquely placed us where we are right now. God, I pray that you would help us catch your vision for our workplace. Catch your way of doing it, working with your company values. Lord, help us to work with our heart and soul. Help us to work with a mind that you've given us. Help us to love the people around us, even when it's tricky to, even when we don't want to, even when it's Monday morning. God, will you help us with that? Holy Spirit, I pray that you would fill us all to be real agents of the renewal of the workplace, that we would go out and this summer we'd have a profound impact on all of our workplaces across Bristol, that we would come back together in September and tell some amazing stories about all the work that you have done through us. Amen.